Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Chwaba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. And now, a guy who likes to talk trash, but only when he's at the dump, Pete Chwaba.
Hey, hey, we are back. Hour number two promises to be every bit as entertaining, maybe more, dare I say, than hour number one. Great to have you with me tonight, wherever you're joining us from, all over the state. We are broadcasting live from downtown Green Bay on a beautiful, is it still summer, Greg?
I'm calling it summer.
All right.
Man, I want good vibes for the weekend. We want warmth. Sun
exactly.
And warmth.
That is the voice of Greg Vadney. Greg is the, I don't have my glass on, executive director of the RAR West. Am I saying that right?
You are saying RAR, it right.
RAR R-A-H-R West Art Museum in Manitowoc. So tell us a little bit, first of all, about, I didn't know Manitowoc had an art museum. That's so cool.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so, I don't know much about Manitowoc, but I'm just,
well,
I'm not
let
surprised.
Let me give you the quick lowdown.
Please.
The RAR West Art Museum is 74 years old. Next year is going to be our 75th anniversary. And we have one of the state's best art collections. It's city-owned.
Really?
So, like, every piece of art that we have, and that includes Picasso's, Warhol's, George O'Keefe, like, big names, names I recognize, you know? And that museum has been around as part of the city. We're a department of the city of Manitowoc. We're free to the public. We are open all year round, so there's always a fun time to go there. We also are located in a historic house, the Vilas RAR Mansion, which is on the National Register, and was built by the same people who built the Pabst Mansion down in Milwaukee.
Okay.
So it's a beautiful old Victorian house on a hill filled with, like, world-class artwork. But we also have this other thing that happened back in 1962, and that's why you've got me on here.
Let's jump right into that. We'll come back to the museum, because I think that's, I love that. And I love when I find out something about a town that I didn't know, and it's close. Like, I live in the Marinette area, but I go through Manitowoc all the time.
On it's my easy, way to right off here. Of 43,
yeah.
Right? Yep.
Absolutely. All right, so, like you said, you had this cool thing that happened, a phenomenon, back in 1962.
That's fairly put, yep.
Sputnik, tell us all about, first of all, tell us about the event, and then we'll get in,
the historical
background? Yeah,
what happened
okay. in 1962,
then we'll
and then
get
we'll
into
get into
what
the,
we're doing this
festival.
Weekend.
Yeah,
all
perfect.
Right. So it's beautiful that you have me on, because this is the anniversary date. I don't know whether you know that, but September 5th, 1962, early morning.
Oh, today. Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha. Wow.
Bright light in the sky, and in the middle, like dead center of North 8th Street in our downtown area in Manitowoc, hits the Sputnik 4 spacecraft. Now, I'm playing it up, but if you saw it, you'd be like, okay, it was just a little tiny glob of molten
metal. But 20 pounds.
It definitely
could kill someone,
it was
right?
doing damage
yeah.
if it hit somebody. Luckily, it hit in the middle of the night. It was like 3:30 in the morning when it landed. And that little piece, it had been set up in 1960 by the Soviets.
Jeez.
They lost control of it within about a month. Now, there was nobody in the ship. It
okay.
wasn't like we lost a cosmonaut. There is a legend that there's a lost cosmonaut in it, because it was in Russia, it was known as Korabl 1. And the Korabl program was the program that eventually sent Yuri Gagarin, the first person in space, into
right.
space. But there was nobody on this Sputnik 4. So anyway, it when it crash landed, it became a very quick sensation, certainly in Manitowoc, and then a little like footnote in the Cold War, because, you know, when this happened, there was a lot of fighting going on. This was 1 month before the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Okay.
So as a consequence, after the Cuban Missile Crisis, there's a bit of a thaw. And as kind of an olive branch, a big metal chunk of an olive branch, this piece of Sputnik was given back to the Russians. So the Russians have the original. But at the museum, we have a vignette, an exhibit about the Sputnik story, and we have a cast model that NASA made before it was handed back and then gifted to us. So, we, you know, you can go to the museum and see the quote-unquote piece. It's not the original piece, but it looks like it.
Do you regret giving it back?
It wasn't my decision.
Come on, Greg.
I was like negative, what, 15 yeah. years old at
Not
that time.
Not even a thought yet.
But hey, here's the thing I regret is I had a friend when I took this job at the museum back in 2011, a very good friend of mine was working for Boeing. We're not going to get into what's going on with Boeing right now, but he worked for Boeing and he worked in Moscow. And I said, hey, you got to contact the people that you know in aerospace. He did digging for about a year for me. Nothing. Found no information about it there. Now, he's a good friend, so I trust him. I think he was really doing the research. But I always think of it like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
Where it's just in a nondescript container in a gigantic warehouse outside of Moscow. And I wish we could get it back.
You know where I think it is? I think it's on Putin's mantle above his fireplace with a picture of you right above it.
Yeah. Well, if I can be a bridge builder, right? Vlad and I go way back.
That is crazy, though. That's like right out of a movie.
So, yeah. And you think about this, and I have thought about it because this is my job.
Yeah.
It has been... If the thing crashes to Earth. Now, things come out of outer space all the time.
Right.
And almost always they crash into the water because we're mostly water on Earth.
Sure.
And then if it crashes on land, inhabitable land really isn't that much of land. So the chances that it's going to crash in the middle of a city.
Somewhere we'd find it.
And then you think to yourself, there's no reason why it had to crash on Earth. It could have just stayed in orbit or shot out. So like you can't comprehend. In mathematics, the odds of this landing dead center of the street in front of a museum, by the way,
it was directly in front of our museum
in 1962. It's just incredible that it landed.
And we didn't know about Sputnik, our country, correct? I think that's what accelerated the space war.
By 62, we knew about it.
Okay.
Because the first Sputnik went up in 57 or 58, and it was like, oh my gosh. And then this was set up in 60. And Yuri Gagarin had already gone up and down by the time this crashed in 62. Now, the U.S. government, the military, and the FBI knew that this was going to crash. And amateur astronomers knew it was going to crash. They've got their telescopes down in Milwaukee, and there was a group of people that worked with the federal government to track what were very few orbiting satellites.
Yeah.
So they were tracking it. But nobody bothered to tell anyone in Manitowoc. So when it crashed, first there's lights in the sky, and that got reported all throughout the state. And then two officers, Bauk and Rustbolt, are going around at like 5 in the morning on their rounds. They see a smoldering hole in the street.
Literally smoldering.
Smoldering, still hot. This is 2 hours later. Manitowoc is a manufacturing town.
Yeah.
So they were kind of like, maybe it's a piece of aluminum fell off a truck.
Right.
So they kick it over to the curb with, dig it out with their nightstick and kick it to the curb. This is the story I've heard.
Wow.
And then they go back to their precinct after they finish their rounds, and the radio is lit up with chatter from like, oh, you know, the Air Force and the FBI are roaming around Wisconsin.
That is so cool.
And they're like, I think they should come here because of what we just saw. So then they came. They observed it. There was actually a gentleman at one of the manufacturing plants who was a specialist on whatever materials that spaceship was made of. He came in and did an analysis, and then they whisked it off to Cambridge, Massachusetts for some additional testing where they said, hey, this is what we think it is. And the Russians said, we have no idea what you're talking about.
They were like, of course.
Sputnik. I've never heard the word Sputnik.
That is not the word, the voice of Vladimir Putin. That is Greg Vadney. He is the executive director of the RAR West Art Museum in Manitowoc. He dropped by in studio. This is so cool to have you here to talk about Sputnik Fest. All right, so now we got a little history on Sputnik and what happened and what crashed in the middle of the night.
That's right.
Tell us about your celebration in honor of that event this Saturday.
Yeah, well, I always say, like, if you're thinking that we're going to do a somber memorial right. to a passengerless spaceship that crash-landed, you are mistaken. What we have done is we essentially decided, let's use this as an excuse to throw the most, like, ridiculous sci-fi and space-themed costume party, block party that we could do. And so my predecessor was the one, I give her full credit, Barbundy Jost was the director before me, and she said, this is lightning in a bottle, right? This is something that no other
yeah.
organization can celebrate. Let's have fun with it.
You got to have fun with it. Absolutely.
And so the idea I always say is think ray guns, think flying saucers, because there is that 1962 sci-fi and space wonder bend to it.
Right.
But then, you know, as the years have gone by, we've gotten more into the Star Wars characters, and you'll see dozens and dozens of Star Wars characters just, you know, roaming around a museum and the museum grounds and the streets in front of it. We have three costume contests.
Okay.
So I know you are going to take part as a judge. Thank you very much. That it is. Now, that is a solemn responsibility.
I take it seriously. Look, I already passed a drug test. I got a tuxedo. Is there a dress code?
There's definitely a dress code.
Oh,
I can't say that it's a tuxedo.
Okay, good, because I was joking. I'm going to judge the junior space debris at 4 p.m. and the captain space debris at 5 p.m. And I'll get there a little early. You wanted me to get a sense of the thing.
Oh, definitely. I would say come by 3 p.m. because the way we look at it is this. If you're nervous about putting a costume on, we got a costume contest. Okay, we understand. If maybe you don't want to wear a costume, have your kid wear a costume.
Okay.
Okay, your kid doesn't want to wear a costume. Make your pet wear a costume. So the first contest is the alien pet costume contest. Dogs, cats, lizards, snakes, snails, whatever.
Snakes?
We have in the past.
Sounds like pandemonium.
So that is the first contest at 3 p.m. We got the 4 p.m. kids. You're going to break some hearts.
All
right.
Okay.
And then finally, Captain Space Debris is at 5 o'clock. And then after that, we do our alien drop raffle.
Okay.
So during the course of the day, it's a raffle that you can buy tickets from now all the way until 6 p.m. on Saturday. Though instead of like a ping pong ball in a cage, you're getting an alien with your number on it. The aliens all go up on a fire truck. And get dropped, and we use that Sputnik spot where it hit as the bullseye.
Oh, man. So I'm going to get to see
that
spot.
Oh, absolutely.
All right.
We'll take some pictures.
I have not we don't have to talk about this in the air, but I have not gotten my signing bonus yet. We'll talk about that during the break. We got to do a very quick break here. Greg Vadney is here. We're talking Sputnik, and we'll have more on that, this really cool event on Saturday. I'm a judge, folks. You got to come out. You got to come out anyway, but it would be great to see you out there. We'll talk more about this with Greg. In just a minute. This is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba on the Civic Media Radio Network.
There's a progress we have found, a way to talk around the problem, building towers.
For Sputnik Fest before the break, you are now, because that is, tell us about that song.
That's Exposed Foreheads. That's the band that's going to be playing.
That's the name of the band.
They're Exposed, X-posed, and then the number 4, Heads.
Okay.
And you just heard them. If you don't get that, I mean, think Devo, think that synth pop of the 80s, and they dress up in costume as astronauts, as aliens. We had them last year. They come up from Milwaukee. And they'd been bugging us. We were running circles around each other for a few years. And they said, we got to do this. And we said, yeah, come on up. And then we were like, man, we're making you the Sputnik Fest house band. Because are the prototype for the right band for this event. Right?
Yeah, totally.
And you just heard them. They kick off at 2 p.m.
Okay.
And they run all the way up until 6 with breaks for some of those costume contests, because we're going back and forth between the music and the costume contest. So Sputnik Fest is at the corner of North 8th Street and Park Street, right in front of the Rahr West Art Museum.
Okay.
This year's Sputnik Fest is sponsored by Community First. We're very thankful for them and all of our sponsors. We kick things off at noon on Saturday with our Freaky Printing 5K walk and run. That actually takes people from the spot where Sputnik hit. That's our start finish line. They go down through our downtown, see all the great murals. So there's that art aspect of it.
Yeah.
And come right back and they finish right over the spot where Sputnik hit. That's our finish line as well. And that kicks things off. We also have our art space, which has projects for kids and families, along with games and the opportunity for kids to win some great prizes. That goes on all afternoon. Like I said, we've got the costume contest, the first one, Alien Pet Costume Contest, sponsored by Central Bark Doggy Daycare. And then the kids costume contest and what used to be known as Miss Space Debris, but we had to call it Captain Space Debris because we just retired a two-time champion who was spectacular. His talent last year was he was dressed as this gigantic yellow robot, a homemade robot costume, and he sang a song about Sputnik landing to the tune of Yellow Submarine. He was great. Martin Morente, I hope he's listening in. If he is, he's listening late at night in Valencia, Spain. He informed me about a month ago that he had moved to Spain. So now, for anybody who wants to participate in this costume contest, it is wide open. Your two-time defending champion is out of the running this year.
Wow.
So it's wide open.
Sounds like he kind of pulled a Jim Brown and retired at the peak of his career.
Leave him wanting more, right?
I guess
like
so,
Costanza.
Yeah. Like Costanza. All right, so this my guest is Greg Vadney. He is the executive director of the Rar West Art Museum in Manitowoc. If you haven't seen it, get there. It sounds like they have some really cool stuff, but this Saturday especially, there's some really cool stuff happening there from 12 to 6. It's Sputnik Fest. I'll be judging two things, one at 4 p.m., the Junior Space Debris, and the Captain Space Debris at 5 p.m. And then you have a raffle, too, an alien drop raffle. This is going to be so much fun. And is it free to the public?
The event is free to the public, and
so
the museum
great.
Is free. So the museum will be open during all the events. Everything really happens outside.
Yeah.
So think of it as a block party. We got tents up for everything. I think we're not going to have to worry about precipitation, but we always have the tents up for the stages and that kind of thing. We have two stages with things intermingled between the two all afternoon long. We've got food trucks. We got the bar. We got everything for all your food and drink needs. But the museum is also open, so you can check out some of the great exhibits that we have at the Rar West Art Museum. And if you do miss Sputnik Fest this weekend, I hope you don't, because every dollar that we bring in during Sputnik Fest, that goes towards arts programming all year long at the Rar West. So it's a great fundraiser for us.
Oh, man.
But if you do, know that the Rar West is open all year round.
Yeah.
And it is free to the public because it's a department of the city of Manitowoc.
I love it.
Yeah.
I had no idea that we have to, there's some really great art museums in Wisconsin. And
yeah, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, we've just kind of created this conglomeration called Wisconsin Art Destinations. So if you go to the Rar West website, rarwestartmuseum.org, right on the homepage, there's a little link to WAD, Wisconsin Art Destinations, and that includes places like the Trout Museum down in Appleton, the John Michael Kohler in Sheboygan, the Woodson out in Wausau, some wonderful art institutions all throughout the state, and gives you ideas on how to do a day trip.
That's great. We got to get this piece of Sputnik back, though, Greg. I think that would...
Pete, if we can put ourselves out there, I think the first step is contacting the consulate.
Yeah.
And you and I get over there to Russia.
Maybe we shouldn't discuss our plan on the radio, but listen, we'll talk off the air. I think we could.
Well, that and your signing bonus. You got to talk about
it. Yeah. Listen, I'm not going to. It's fine. We'll talk
I know. Your
later.
Agent had contacted me.
Nah, my agent, yeah. So, all right. So, Greg, we talked about in the last segment, I was talking about our popcorn pick of the week was A Few Good Men.
Yeah.
You were in that show.
I did A Few Good Men in high school.
And you were the Kevin Pollak character.
I was the Kevin Pollak character.
How fun was
Weinberg,
that?
Lieutenant Weinberg.
Yeah.
It was good. One of the scenes from the that was not in the movie, but was in the play. You had said it was a play
Was it a David Mamet play?
It was what's his name? We did West Wing.
Aaron Sorkin. Yeah, right.
Aaron Sorkin wrote it.
Yeah, that guy can
write. And I had to chug a bottle of Yoo-hoo. And you know, when you're a 17-year-old kid, chugging a bottle of Yoo-hoo comes pretty naturally. That was one of the fun parts of that. The other thing is, like, there was a scene where I was face to face with the big Marine. Dawson.
Oh, yeah. Dawson, yeah.
So we were face-to-face and had a shouting match with each other. And, like, again, as 17-year-olds, we kept breaking up. But the guy that I was face-to-face with ended up becoming a Commodore in the Navy. He went to the Naval Academy eventually and became a Commodore. So, I really was in-depth in that role, like, with real Navy guys.
I got more excited when I thought he became a Commodore, like, with Lionel Richie. And I thought that, well, that's kind of more natural jump from a show like that.
Well, he was a brick house.
Right, okay. You ever hear the song Machine Gun?
Yeah.
Conrad, fire up Machine Gun. We'll go to break with that. That's one of my favorite comments. I don't think Lionel Richie had anything to do with that song. Do you remember what that was in? What movie that was in?
You've got to tell me.
Boogie Nights.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Does that sound familiar?
Yes, absolutely.
So,
that's another movie, like, it comes on anytime in that movie. I'm stopping it. I'm watching the rest of Boogie Nights.
My favorite character in that film is John C. Reilly when he... It's like everything the guy does. He's like, how much do you bench? And then Mark Wahlberg does a cannonball into the pool at the party. And he's like, let me show you what you did wrong.
Like, and then he does the belly flop.
That guy. Such a great film. So you said you're watching a show on HBO. What's the, we've got about 30 seconds left.
Oh, yeah,
what's
real quick. Yeah. You were asking me what I binge watched. And on Max, they have a new show called Kite Man, Hell Yeah. It's a cartoon. It's a spinoff of the Harley Quinn show. And Harley Quinn was super popular. Kelly Cuoco,
yeah, from Big Bang.
Yeah, Big Bang voiced Harley Quinn. And she's also done some of the episodes of this show. One of my good friends is an executive producer, so shout out to Chris Mars.
That's awesome.
The whole gang at Max that are putting that great program together. Check it out.
I will see you Saturday at noon or at about 3, my friend. Thank you for having me out there. I'm really looking forward to it. And thank you for driving up to talk about it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me in studio.
Greg Vadney. All right, buddy. When we come back, Ian O'Connor is here to talk about his new book, Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. This is Pete Schwabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many.
Welcome back. Tomorrow night is a Bar Band Friday here at Nightlight. Terry Barr from Max Inc. Radio will be here. And Dom Salvia will be here to talk about his new show here at Civic Media that will be on right before Nightlight from 4 to 6. So that'll be a fun show. All right, we are going to pivot here. This is exciting. I have a guest on who is a best-selling author about to join us. And he wrote a book about a gentleman that many of us here in Wisconsin are very familiar with, and he goes by the name of Aaron Rodgers. So, Conrad, you know who that is, right?
I believe so.
And you're a fan?
I was.
All right, fantastic. Let's see if we can change that. No, I'm kidding. Half kidding. Ian O'Connor joins us. He is the author of Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. Ian, welcome to Nightlight.
Pete, how are you?
Doing great. Thank you so much for your time tonight and being here. This is so interesting to me. I don't even kind of really know where to start with you, Ian, because Aaron Rodgers is such a fascinating character. I totally get why you wrote the book and why he interested you, but can you tell us something about him that you learned along the way and give us just sort of an overview of the book, if you would?
Yeah, by the way, Vince Lombardi coached my high school. The only place he had ever been a head coach before the Packers was St. Cecilia's High School in Englewood, New Jersey.
Oh, wow.
So I was always fascinated. He lived 8 houses away from where I grew up. So I was always fascinated by the Packers of Lombardi and Starr and wanted to write a book on a Packer at some point in my life. So Aaron got traded into my backyard. And David Moranis, of course, wrote an epic book on Lombardi that is my favorite all-time sports book. I would have loved to have had a crack at Vince, but that didn't happen. So Aaron, I think, I was always really intrigued by him from a distance in New York, watching his career unfold. I always thought he was the best interview in the NFL, very thoughtful, engaging, and candid. But I think the one thing I found that was surprising, to be honest with you, Pete, is the amount of players I interviewed from high school through junior college, and Green Bay that absolutely admired him, respected him, liked him, loved him as a teammate and a leader surprised me. It was almost unanimous. I thought I would get more negativity, particularly based on the way he's been covered the last few years. And I even think I go back to last summer when he arrived with the Jets. Jets fans watched Hard Knocks, the show on HBO, and they thought going in that Aaron was a jerk, basically. A lot of them told me that, and they were okay with that. As long as he played like a first ballot Hall of Famer, they didn't care. Sure. But they could not believe coming away from that HBO show how much they thought he was a really good teammate, leader, and they were very happy that he came across that way. So that was the one thing. The teammates en masse, just their respect for him, that knocked me back. I was not I was surprised by that.
That's really if you hear that, which is so interesting about Aaron Rodgers, because I remember thinking, boy, it's hard not to like this guy. For a lot of his career, he was so good. And he was a good interview. And I didn't grow up in Green Bay, at least the early part of my life, but I was an Aaron Rodgers fan. And I'm not saying I'm not now, but he just seems like he's almost purposefully trying to kind of change his image and be more quirky. And then you hear the stuff about his family. And I'm like, well, that kind of speaks volumes. Like, old friends or family don't talk to him. And I'm just hearing stuff, what I hear through sports media. But has that been your experience? Does he talk to his family anymore?
Well, he did have a meeting with his father last summer at Lake Tahoe at the Celebrity Golf Tournament. His father hadn't seen him in 9 years or talked to him, but he put himself, Ed Rodgers did, in the crowd hoping Aaron would see him. And lo and behold, Aaron did see him. And he decided that day to go over and give him a hug. And Ed Rodgers turned around in the gallery and he saw his son looking at him 15 feet away. And he froze because he said, I forgot what it felt like to be in my son's presence and to have him look at me.
Oh, wow.
So Aaron hugged him and said, I love you. They each said, I love you. Ed Rodgers cried and they both said it was a very meaningful 30-second moment. Aaron told me for the book that he wants to have a relationship with his father again. So the family reconciliation would start there. His father was always his idol before the estrangement. And so that's the hope that there is a reconciliation with those two. It hasn't happened yet, as far as I know. But I think then hopefully the rest of the family would fall into place.
So what is it about that? Is it does he create these rifts, so to speak, like kind of like Michael Jordan, as an effort somehow to motivate himself, do you think, Ian? Or is that just, does he just get rubbed the wrong way easily?
The way it was described to me by his best friend, Jordan Russell, in the book, and it's funny because Jordan Russell was exiled from Aaron's life for 3 or 4 years, too, and he was brought back from the place I call in the book the island. That's where Aaron puts people that he no longer wants part of his life, and it's a cold and distant place and lonely there, and Jordan Russell was one of the very few who got rescued from the island, but he said Aaron has always been hell-bent on becoming an all-time great and a master of his craft. And if you're not mission-aligned, whether you're a family member or a friend, he will remove you from his path permanently, usually. And that's just the way he is. He's not the first person I've met like that, but it's not a great character trait to have and very unforgiving in that way. But yeah, and effectively, I think Aaron's at a place now where he's trying to figure out how to end it. And the estrangement has become its own living organism, and he doesn't know how to kill it off. So it's easier to, instead of confronting it, to just let it linger and fester and live on. So yeah, I'm hoping he does figure it out for the sake of him. And it's just as a human being, not an author.
Right.
I was kind of hoping in some strange way that this book would help just get some of it out in public and maybe change the dynamic of that family dysfunction. But we'll see how it plays out.
That is the voice of Ian O'Connor. He wrote the book Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. He's written several books about big-time sports figures. Ian, you mentioned before, I thought you said you talked to Rodgers, but the book is unauthorized. Were you able to interview him for the book, even though it was unauthorized, or does he want to fight you? Where does he fit in here with the book?
I had actually handed the book in, I want to say it was late January, might've been early February, and the manuscript was done. And all of a sudden 2 weeks, and that was without him. He had not responded to my messages through the Jets, through his agent. I went directly to Aaron. I sent him my books on Belichick and Coach K.
Yeah.
And I got nothing but indifference and non-responses. But 2 weeks after I handed the book in, I got a message from the Jets saying, Aaron is now willing to see you. So I flew from New Jersey out to Los Angeles, drove to, by the way, I had a bomb scare on my flight. I got diverted to Chicago because there was a possibility that, of a bomb being on that plane. Thankfully, that didn't happen. But we reboard the plane after 7 hours in Chicago. I thought I was going to miss the interview for a while there. So thankfully, I made it to his place in Malibu, beautiful home right on the Pacific Ocean. His backyard is the ocean. It's a beautiful setting. And wow. I didn't know how much time he was going to give me, but I think what happened is I had contacted so many of his friends and associates. And I think over time they said to him, the guy seems legitimate. He seems like he doesn't have an agenda. And I didn't, I had no agenda whatsoever. And I think Aaron realized that. And he was willing to engage on some sensitive subjects, particularly the family estrangement. And he made it a better book over those 2 hours. And I very much appreciated that.
Wow. That's great. If you're, let's just say, hypothetically, if your plane had exploded and you couldn't make the meeting, do you think he would have put you on the island, or would he have been able to look past that?
Oh, God. Well, I wouldn't have survived the explosion. I don't think so. I would have had bigger problems than being on Aaron's Island. I think,
of course,
if that had happened.
Of course.
By the way, when I was driving to Malibu, they had like record mudslides out there in February.
Boy.
Terrible. I was afraid I wouldn't get to his house that way either. So. But he was very, when I got there, he was very cordial, and we sat in the back. It's a hell of a backyard. I mean, it really is. The
sounds like it. Jeez.
But because it's unauthorized, he didn't owe me anything. He didn't have any editorial control. He was getting no money from this project, not that he needed it. And so the fact that he sat there, and I would have loved 15 to 20 hours with him to tell the story of his life, but he gave me 2 hours of fact-checking that was very valuable.
Oh, I can imagine. Does that tell you that he read the book and wanted to meet with you, that he kind of does have a plan, or he does like to be unique or mysterious in a bit? Like, it's right there in your title. If he's giving you his blessing, so to speak, without authorizing it, does that mean like kind of the way he acts is part of his plan on some level?
I think a lot of people around the NFL believe that. And he has leaned into this villainous role in the last 3 years that he was assigned by the media after COVID, after he said those four words, "Yeah, I've been immunized," when he was not vaccinated.
Right.
That really changed his entire life, never mind his image.
Right.
But he does seem to lean into that character, and he wants you to think he doesn't care what you say or what you write. But everybody I know who knows him knows that he cares an awful lot about what you say and what you write about him. So he's a fascinating guy, I have to say, very intellectually curious. And one thing that struck me was I said to him, "Hey, as a biographer, do you understand I have no choice but to write about your family estrangement? But if you feel I actually do have a choice and you don't agree with that premise, let's have that debate right now." And he said, because he's read so many books and biographies, he's a very well-read man. And he got it. He said, "I understand if you're doing my life story, you basically have no choice but to include that." And not, I've met superstar athletes, Derek Jeter, one of them, who never would have understood that. So I appreciated that he got it and understood I had no choice but to write about that part of his life.
That's really interesting. So Ian, was there a moment where you decided to write the book or something that happened? Was it his response to COVID or something? What was going on in his life when you started the book?
Actually, it was the trade. But I was always interested in him from afar. But I live in New Jersey. He got traded to a team that practices in New Jersey. He goes from the smallest market in the NFL to the biggest. And I thought it was the perfect time. At the end of his career, he clearly identified something with the Jets that would potentially enhance his legacy in the sport. And that is, it's a franchise that has not stepped in the Super Bowl since Neil Armstrong stepped on the moon. So that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
If I could win a championship for that Charlie Brown franchise in New York City, that is going to feel like I won three championships, not one. So, and he's right. That would be, if he pulls it off, and I've been doing this in New York for nearly 40 years, that would be the biggest New York sports story of my lifetime. And so listen, Tom Brady has seven Super Bowl rings and Aaron just has the one. He's never closing that gap, but to win one in New York, I think would close it to some degree, because that ring would just feel a lot bigger than one.
Sure. Or at least certainly enhance his own legacy. I remember when he took over, I felt like Favre kind of got chased out of town here, and I'm like, this is crazy. Like, I've seen what that guy does. You don't know what you have in Rodgers. Well, obviously they did, and I know they were competitive for a while. Rodgers wins a Super Bowl, and now here it is 12 years later or whatever, and you thought he would have won another one. So I think you're right. Winning one with the Jets would just put him in another category.
Yeah, it's amazing. Those of us here in the New York area, very jealous of Green Bay football fans, because you've gone from a first ballot Hall of Famer in Favre to a first ballot Hall of Famer in Rodgers to a guy who looks like he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer in Jordan Love. And oh, by the way, you had a quarterback by the name of Bart Starr who won 5 championships back in the day. So I've seen a lot of bad football played by quarterbacks in New York. So we're jealous of Green Bay fans. But yeah, it's interesting, because could you imagine if the Packers ever played Aaron Rodgers and the Jets in the Super Bowl? And it's not out of the question, because
right.
The Packers this year considered one of the 3 or 4 teams in the NFC that could get there. And the Jets are considered one of the 3 or 4 teams in the AFC that has the roster to get there. And they got to keep Aaron healthy this year. And let's see how the season unfolds. But Jets fans are having a hard time buying in, because they bought in last year and they got burned after 4 snaps in the first game. And they're having a hard time really embracing the idea that this team could go the distance.
Listen, you don't have to tell me. I grew up in Chicago, so I've been dealing with Packer quarterbacks for the better part of 30 years. My guest is Ian O'Connor. His book is Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. We'll have a couple more minutes with Ian when we come back after a very quick break. This is Pete Schwabba and Nightlight on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Nightlight. We are talking with Ian O'Connor. He's the author of Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers, who is a local legend here, obviously, in the state of Wisconsin, and still is. Ian, so what do you think people will come away with when they read this book? Will you change? Not that you're trying to, but will they have a different opinion of him, do you think? Will they give him some, cut him some slack, or what do you think?
I think I know more people who have read it have said to me that they like him a little bit more after reading it than they did when they started. There have been a few that have said the opposite. And so what I tried to do is really balance out the last 3 years of coverage of Aaron, which has been mostly negative in the media. And frankly, a lot of it self-inflicted wounds and unforced errors committed by Aaron. So it really was his doing in a lot of ways. The conspiracy theories on top of the Jimmy Kimmel dust up the old COVID misdirection play that he tried to run an end around on the media, and it just blew up on him. And
right.
So there are a lot of stories of kindness and generosity behind the scenes that his friends told me, associates told me, again, that he doesn't want to publicize. And his marketing agent with CAA, Ed Berry, is frustrated. He said, Aaron's a frustrating client because I want to publicize some of these things that counter the negative, and he won't let me. So I think I bring out a fair amount of those stories in the book to show a complete, or to paint a complete portrait of the human being and balance it out a little bit. And also, I never want to tell the reader what to decide. I want the reader to figure out good guy, bad guy, or somewhere in the middle. And that was my goal with this book.
What do you think about how crazy was, I assume Out of the Darkness comes from when he went into the cave, and I'm hearing this secondhand. I don't know exactly what he took, but as I understand it, was some type of hallucinogenic or something. When I was
ayahuasca.
When I was a kid, a professional athlete couldn't say that. This is just crazy that he can just say to the world, yeah, I'm doing this. And people are like, oh, okay. You know, like maybe I'll try that sometime, you know? I don't know if things changed that much in sports where a guy could just be that open. Obviously they have.
Well, he didn't do it in this country. Ayahuasca, he did it in Peru and Costa Rica.
Okay.
But he had that friend I mentioned who was exiled from his life and is now back in, Jordan Russell. He went on an ayahuasca retreat in Peru in 2019 and came back and said, Aaron, you got to try this. And he was dating Danica Patrick at the time. So he went with her to Peru, sat for some ayahuasca ceremonies and came away thinking, wow, this really was a spiritual cleansing. And I feel like a better man and even a better athlete. He said it helped him play better football. So I think he'll use it for the rest of his career, however long that lasts and beyond, really. I friends of his, more than one, have told me that they feel he is a better person since he started using ayahuasca. So it's helped his relationships, he said, with some people. Hopefully it will help at some point with his family. And I think ayahuasca is here to stay in Aaron Rodgers' life.
I think all of a sudden I feel like the only person who hasn't tried it. I don't know.
I haven't either. So.
We'll road trip.
Of us,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right, Ian, a couple more questions for you. You've written books about Belichick, Coach K, Mike Krzyzewski, Derek Jeter, Jack Nicklaus. Who of those icons, really? That's an impressive resume of books. Who are you most intrigued by?
Well, Pete, the obvious answer right now would be Aaron Rodgers to try to get more people to buy the book,
sure.
Right? I think Rodgers is really at the top of that list because Belichick was a mysterious figure, but there was a sameness about him as a character throughout his coaching career. Aaron was elusive. He was considered one of the good guys in sports up until 3 years ago. He was being praised for his stance on Kaepernick and protesting athletes, and he rebuked a fan who yelled out a anti-Muslim slur during the national anthem. Right? And President Obama thanked him for doing that, and Aaron was considered a socially aware athlete that the media was praising. And then all of a sudden, the same media members who were praising him for that really destroyed him over the COVID misdirection. And really, it was a lie, frankly. And Aaron did admit to me he made a mistake there. He doesn't admit many mistakes, but he did say I should have told my truth at the time. And I do think he would have gotten less than half the criticism he did get had he told his truth, which was he was allergic to an ingredient in Pfizer and Moderna and concerned about Johnson & Johnson side effects. Had he said that, I think things would have gone a little differently for him, but he didn't. And he's a very smart person, but sometimes he's too smart for his own good, and that was certainly one of those times.
That's interesting. And what I'm taking away from this conversation is just that he is totally capable of contrition, which he doesn't always come across that way. Like he seems to back himself into a corner at times and then just not really back down. But it's interesting to hear that to you, he said a few of those things where he's like, you know, I made a mistake. And that's refreshing, I think, to hear that.
Ian, you don't hear the all-time greats say that very often
right.
in any context. I was wrong. I'm sorry. They just don't say those things.
Yeah. I have one more question for you. I'm a writer myself, not books. I'm not smart enough to do what you do, but do you write? How do you write? Do you write every day? Do you have a set time, or do you pull a Kerouac and just get the mood catches you and you write for 4 days in a row? What's your process as a writer?
I'm better at night writing. I don't know why that is. I think many years as a sports columnist where I was writing after night games on deadline.
Okay.
And so I was used to really being locked in at night when the house is quiet and the office is quiet. But I generally like to gather as much material through reporting. And I interviewed 250 plus people for this book. And I didn't wait till I was done with those interviews before I started writing, or I never would have gotten done. But I would say I did about 100, 125 of those interviews and then started writing. And then, okay, I have a sense of where I'm going with this story. But generally speaking, I like to start with a scene that's present tense with an introduction in the book and then kind of take the life in chronological form. Well, in this case, I started with his grandfather, who was an amazing World War II combat pilot with an incredible record of service. There are very good reasons why he's buried in Arlington National Cemetery, but Edward Rodgers, that story had never been told. And I found all these documents, his 44 missions against the Hitler war machine, just incredible stuff, acts of valor. And so that actually, I think, impressed Aaron, and he's talked about that publicly. And that might have been one of the reasons why he sat down with me, because he knew I was starting the book with his grandfather's service, a story that's never been told.
That's great. Ian, I wish you luck with the book. You're a four-time bestseller. You got the endorsement of Peter King, who called it a masterwork on Aaron Rodgers. I hope it's a huge success for you. And this has been really fun. I hope you come back and talk to us again sometime.
Hey, Pete, it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
You got it. All right. Check out the book, Out of the Darkness, The Mystery of Aaron Rodgers. That is Ian O'Connor. So much fun tonight. Greg Vadney, I'd like to thank him. Mark Laffenberg for our popcorn pick of the week. And Ian O'Connor. And thank you for all your texts. As always, I will be back tomorrow night with more Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. On behalf of Conrad, good night, Wisconsin. Attitude on.